This is TJ Medina. Today is November 19th, 2016, and I'm conducting an oral history with Ken McCoy. This is for Fresno State's Valley Public History Initiative, and we're preserving our stories. All right, Ken, first I want to thank you for coming out and attending this event. To start, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? What year were you born?
1962.
Yes. Okay. And you have a sibling, a sister?
Do
you
have Deborah. I have a sister, Deborah. I have a brother, Bobby. I have a brother, older brother, Michael.
Okay.
And we're all from Fresno.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask next. So Deborah, Bobby, and Michael?
Michael,
okay.
Right. So and, sister, yes.
Okay. What part of Fresno were you... did you guys reside in?
We all over Fresno, south, okay. Southeast, part of Southwest, part of the country area mm-hmm. near Dinuba.
Oh, okay.
Just because of, we were former foster children.
Okay.
So we were separated and spread out, and then we finally went back home at, I think it was 12. So okay. We were separated at 5 mm-hmm. and went back home at 12. So 7 years as a foster child.
Oh, okay.
So... yeah.
Now, when you guys were reconnected at 12, where was that? Was that in Fresno?
That was in Fresno, in Southeast Fresno.
Southeast Fresno.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And did you attend school in Fresno?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We went to a lot of the schools. Carver at first. So we went to Carver. And then, let's see, Carver, Lane, Fresno County School, Ivy, Edison, Irwin. Like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Go ahead.
I have to...
the city, so we ended up going to several different schools.
Okay.
But then we went to Carver, Lane, Sequoia, Fresno, or Ivy School, it was called Fresno Colony.
Okay.
And then we went to Irwin and then Edison.
Okay.
So, and then, of course, Michael was older, so he went to... he went to Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
and then, but otherwise, that's where we went to school.
Okay.
Yeah.
What years did you attend Irwin and Edison High School?
Irwin was the year that I actually started performing. So that would have been near 75.
Okay.
74-ish, around there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what got you into performing in that 75, the year 75?
A clown. I was when I went to school, I was the class clown.
Oh, okay.
But I knew my work. The teacher would tell you, do your work. You did your work.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you said, okay, what else for me to do? So you would joke, but if they called you on, is your work done and is it complete and is it thorough, can't argue with me.
Yeah.
There's no way. So that's kind of what started that. And I wanted to make people laugh in a way. But at the same time, like I said, I was good at what I did in school. So academically, that was what I did.
Oh, okay.
So, and I just always had a vision in my mind of that I could captivate.
Mm-hmm.
That was the other thing, is captivating people.
Okay.
So that was a major part of it.
So you always wanted to entertain from
that was
age.
All major part of it, major okay. part of it. So, and I was different. I'm different meaning I did a lot of thinking. I was a thinker.
Okay.
So at that same time that we were getting involved with that, we got involved in martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent years training in martial arts, so you had again showmanship, martial arts, this blend was going
on. Yeah, a lot of things tied together.
It was all connected.
Yeah.
So, and that martial arts is what kept us out of the street, any of that problem stuff. We
mm-hmm.
just, that, we were so disciplined to stay away from that
yeah.
negativity. So
okay.
that was a very big part of that.
Did you find any, during that time, was there any unfair association with street life or gang life that maybe was associated with the dancing that you were doing?
No.
Okay, great.
No. Okay. It was more like how good are whatever group that performed, how good are they?
Yeah.
Where are they from? And what moves do they have? That,
okay.
That was the concern. Nobody ever said it, but inherently that's what was on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you said, who's going to go check them out over at this or that? Who's going to go look at them and tell everybody how they did or whatever? Mm-hmm. So that was it. It was no negative, no.
So any rivalry that existed was just solely based on the craft, the
dancing?
And it
was more like, they turned it out over there. And so the rivalry was, are you going to turn out your event like they turned out their event? So mm-hmm. rivalry?
You wouldn't characterize it as a rivalry?
You wouldn't say it at all.
Okay,
it was more
that's good.
Like, how did y'all do? Oh, cool, man. And how did you guys do? Well, you guys performing that again.
Okay.
And then every once in a while, people would say, we should do something together. But again, you had so many different lives and personalities that, and travel. You didn't have a lot. People didn't have cars or stuff like that. So whatever, whenever.
Was there any public transportation?
Buses. You had buses, but, you know.
Still limited.
It was limited unless somebody, uncle had a car, and you would say, hey, can somebody pay for gas? Let's scrape up some money mm-hmm. to pay for gas to get us there and pick us up. You didn't have to stay there.
Yeah.
But get us there and pick us up. So sometimes my dad was very instrumental when I performed in dropping me off and picking me up and many times. And a lot of times the groups, depending on the time, would practice at our apartments or houses, wherever we were.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't do it in the house. You had to be outside.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the other thing, you know. And my dad always knew where we were.
Okay.
You know, I was a big part. He was a single parent. So
he knew
when he was a worker, he drove trucks. So he and dad, you didn't play with doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Even when so here's the point, very important. He says, if we wanted to have a party, we want to go to this house party. He would say, if you guys want a party, I'll throw you a party. Therefore, we can control
mm-hmm.
what goes. So that was our big deal.
Yeah.
And of course, at our house parties, that's where to get down. We've gotten down.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remember my dad and I had a dance off. The funniest thing. So anyway,
tell me, please.
We
love to hear it.
My dad was from Texas,
uh-huh.
so they danced differently.
Yeah.
So he saw me perform and dance. He said, "Son, I could do this, and I'll beat you dancing." And so this went on for a long time. This rivalry.
Yeah. In house.
So one time, there was a lot of people at our party, and that was it. There was the big call out.
Yeah.
It was the funniest thing ever. My dad was doing a dance called The Rabbit. My sister, I know she was laughing. We were cracking up. But he knew how to put on a show.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of learned that showmanship from him. And we loved it. We had a great time. But he would go down almost on all fours, but he didn't put his knees on the ground.
And this was The Rabbit? Sorry.
This is called The Rabbit.
Okay.
So he would bounce his feet like four times and then would slap the ground with each hand while he's in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, and then 1, 2, still in that position.
Oh, wow.
And I know you're going like, okay, now what am I going to do on that? How are you going to come back on? So anyway, we had a great time and we did some fun things and it was great.
Yeah.
And of course, the people that were at a house party, we had people at the door, so you didn't have no riffraff in.
Oh, okay.
We didn't do all that. No, we didn't allow that.
Yeah.
No,
that's good.
So that was our connection with our dad to let him know, you know, we're not violating rules and doing the right thing. That was really important to us.
That's good.
Know, doing the right thing.
So your dad was a pretty big influence, not only in life but as a dance
very much,
in your dance life
very
as
much,
well.
Very much.
Okay.
And in martial arts, he drove us to the tournaments and he paid our entry fee.
Mm-hmm.
So this disobedient thing and getting into it with your dad didn't happen in our house. No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I believe that's probably a pretty big, important part of martial arts is obedience,
critical
correct?
Critical and respect.
Respect,
so
yeah.
And that's why I was saying that even the music, we had to be, we were careful with what did you dance to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then you didn't have a lot of nasty music, so to speak. So it didn't say a lot of stuff. So you still had to be careful about what you performed to because our audience was always families.
Mm-hmm.
It was always families, you know. So we were always real careful about that because we realized early that if you're going to broaden your horizon in it, you had to have good, clean sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it was better to not have any singing or any vocals in your music.
Okay.
So that's why we liked groups like Cameo, mm-hmm. Funkadelic, One Nation Under a Groove, Funkadelic, right? Pete Parliament and Funkadelic, One Nation Under a Groove instead of One Nation Fighting, right? And that's what you thought was kind of cool. Like, you're just grooving, not fighting.
Yeah.
That's why you picked those songs and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And these were all popular?
Very popular.
During the
late 70s? This is George Clinton, Bootsy Collins, Parliament. So these are the people that Prince mimicked a lot with the sound and the funk. So funk was part of that too.
Oh, okay.
So that when you hear the term get funky, that's what they were talking about. Like dancing up to where you sweat. That's where that came from.
Oh, okay.
So
I never heard the origin of that.
I know. It's and so that's why it was so important to perform and to perform well, not just perform. And now they call it, like, if you're doing something and it's not hot, they call it weak.
Yeah.
Back then, you danced or not. There was no room back then, because if you were in a circle, there were others cheering you on that may not have been in your group.
Yeah.
So you really, if you were going out, you got to get down.
Yeah.
That was it. Otherwise, stay back. That was the written rule.
Was there a little bit of a fear of, if you did go out there and put yourself out there and people weren't receptive?
Yes.
You know, so you had to really bring it each time?
Yes, okay. Very much. I mean, because if they said, oh, he's going up against this guy and this guy's got a reputation, you would bait it a little bit to see how they respond. And if you noticed their moves were smooth and the guy had charisma in his steps, then you said, okay, I really got to bring up something, or bring the audience on my side very quickly.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't do a lot of dance battles because part of that, when you called somebody out, it's almost like you've been watching them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't really, you had to be very careful when you called somebody out.
Yeah.
Everybody joked with it a lot because you just didn't want it to get all serious. It wasn't about that. So when you were playing and you would point at a guy and you'd go like this and say like this, that was a call out, and everybody would go, ooh, God, and that was it. Because then they would clap their hands, or somebody would play a beatbox, right? They had a stereo, right? And they'd put on a song, so yeah.
Okay. Crazy. You mentioned your middle school days, Irwin, correct? Did you, in some of my research, I uncovered early like talent show performances at Irwin Junior High.
How'd you find that?
Just reading some of the biographical stuff from
absolutely
Boogaloo Sam, Poppin' Pete.
When we had a group called the Soul Patrol,
okay,
and that is where we premiered at Irwin in the cafeteria, which is Computech now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So that is where Irwin was.
Okay.
So when we premiered as the Soul Patrol, we shut it down.
Was that your first time performing with a group?
No.
Oh, okay.
But at the school where you went to school, because the other guys did not go to school there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a couple of guys that went, but then one or two that didn't. So, but when you did that performance, you always made sure your music was cued and ready that was when we did that show.
Oh, okay.
We were like it.
Yeah.
And there's only one picture of us posing that some ladies got out there, and I've been asking. I saw the picture, and it's a classic. But to get it, it's been.
What was the group called again?
The Soul Patrol.
Soul Patrol. Okay.
Yes.
And how many members?
There were five of us.
And did you each like specialize
in
a different Would you care to, you know, uncover, or let me know?
There was a guy named Willie Ray. Ray was a locker.
Okay.
So Willie Ray locked. You had Keith. Keith did slow motion. Mm. I mean, you couldn't believe he was doing it. Then you had Kelvin Morgan that would do the pop. And he's still in Fresno, by the way. We joke about it. He's a minister now, but he would pop. And he was tall, so it looked really good. Then you had Daryl that would get on the ground and do stuff on the ground, kind of clowning around like he was a dog eating out of his hat. So they thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And then I specialized in the robot.
Oh, okay. So you each had your own specialization.
And then you had the unified thing where there was a thing, I don't know if it's going to come up in your research, but there was something called the rag.
Oh, yeah, I haven't come across that. Please.
The only time you've seen the rag in a video was when Janet Jackson did the All Right video.
Okay.
And she pulls out a rag, like a handkerchief. And they did a quick, they threw the rag,
yeah.
And then they put it away. That's called the rag. That was big.
Okay,
that
yeah.
was big because people say, well, how can you dance and then grab a rag and throw it and then throw it to people in your group and they all catch it
mm-hmm.
and you still were cool.
Yeah.
So that was very, very big.
Yeah,
very
I've witnessed, actually seen a little bit on like YouTube and online certain
yes.
things with hats.
Yes.
You know? So that's probably sort of a play on that rag.
All of it mattered. Yes,
dance.
It did.
Okay.
We even, I can't say this around my little son, but we even would light our gloves on fire.
Oh, wow.
We learned a trick how to do it. So we would do it for a few seconds and it would be hot and, like, ooh, and yeah. it was over, right? But it was still cool.
Showmanship, right?
And then you did one time where a guy did a what they called a butt drop on the rag. So it was on fire and he would jump in the air and flatten it and it would be out and
oh,
it was
wow.
cool. That was Willie Ray. So yeah.
We
all had our little things that we would do to make people go, what a show.
Yeah.
What a show. So,
do you remember any other performances with Soul Patrol other than Irwin?
Oh, we did.
Did you do a lot
with them?
We
did a lot of shows, actually. Mm-hmm.
What were some of the venues in locally?
We did the American Legion.
Okay.
Now, I said we have to get in and get out because it was an adult, grown-up place.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, look, we got to get in and we got to get out. We cannot be hanging around mm-hmm. because of the different, you know, the age group. So you just said, oh, we're just going to perform. We're not going there for any other reason. And we had to make it clear as a group. You performed, you got paid, you got out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did West Coast relay events. We did a lot of city events, park events, some West Fresno school events at night, the back to school night, special guests,
yeah.
stuff like that. So
you guys did a lot more of that than like the calling out, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because on the street, you were going to school.
Yeah.
So all that, you know, during that time, you still had to be structured. You know, because certain times, if people weren't going to school, I mean, everybody went to school, but it was like they wanted it to overcome them, and you had to have time for everything else you had to get done.
Yeah.
To allow that time for, you say, okay, we're going to rehearse. We're gonna rehearse off of this, and we're going to rehearse off that. We have a show coming up. So you had a schedule.
So it was a very structured
lifestyle.
You
had to be, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was still private. So I still didn't want people around me all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was still private,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was still getting used to being at home with my family.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so you're getting used to your family.
About what age were you when you kind of reconnected? I think you said 12
yeah,
years old?
Yeah, we went.
When you reconnected 12 with your family?
We were 12 years old. We were going to Sequoia.
Okay.
So that's when we were what we call home, when mm-hmm. everybody was home. My dad got us all back. He told us he would. He got us home.
That's
so
great.
Once we were back, it was like, oh, you know, and so you're at home, so you had to get used to that though. My sister was intelligent. My older brother, at that time, had got his own little apartment. So you were at home with my sister and my younger brother Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby wasn't into performing. Bobby was into martial arts and learning, and that was Bobby.
Okay,
you know, So you were adjusting to that. You didn't fully know what that was like with your blood
mm-hmm.
to live at home. So, but then when they saw that we were going to be performing, they would support us. So my brother Bobby was our announcer and he became our quote-unquote manager as the
okay.
Soul Patrol when we opened up at Irwin, because we needed a front man to make sure that our door was opened on time when we hit the stage
yeah.
and all these little bitty things. And we wanted to bring him in. We didn't want him to feel like he was an outsider.
Okay.
So, and he enjoyed that. And so, you know, that was very important. Then we did the Hinton Center.
Okay.
The Hinton mm-hmm. Center, that was big for the Soul Patrol because that night it was April Fool's Day.
Okay. What year do you recall?
Oh, God, I don't recall the
okay.
year.
But anyway,
it was April Fool's Day, and the Hinton Center was packed. There were no tables. It was packed with people.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been a West Coast Relays weekend, but it was big. And we heard that the Camelot Kings were coming, and we heard there was another group from Madeira coming. And it was, so we got down to three groups that were going to perform
okay.
against each other kind of thing but it was all on stage. And so we're looking, and these guys, one of the groups, I think the gentleman from Madeira, did some stuff, and they were like, they threw a rag down, and they were performing, and then the guy just goes like this, and the rag comes back up, and you were like, oh my God, how are we gonna, and we were going like, how are we gonna, but we said, in front of people, you cannot panic, mm-hmm. right? So I told Willie, I said, why don't we have, since there's five of us, I want five guys spread out around the Hinton Center in the back. And then I told somebody to go tell, before we go on, go tell the DJ to say that the Soul Patrol will not be performing. And then when we drop our head down, you put on the music and yell out April Fools.
Oh, clever.
And so it was, listen, and we were, like I said, there were two on the sides, two on the front, and one in the back. So when he says, ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement that the Soul Patrol will not be performing tonight, look, it was almost a riot. And then he yells out, April Fools. And then he put on this song by the Blackbirds, Unfinished Business.
Okay.
He put it on, and it was loud, and it was over. We ran and jumped up on the stage, and it was over. But that's all I can tell you. That's all I can tell you. We had a choreographed routine, and then everybody knew their part. You didn't have to look. You just did your part on the timing of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Over. That's all I can tell you on that one.
And the Camelot Kings, I think before we started recording, you'd mentioned they were out of the Bay Area,
They were from
correct?
The Bay Area,
and then
yes.
This was another Madeira crew
the
as well?
The other group was from Madeira, and we had never seen them,
okay.
Never knew them, and then you never knew them. And you were like, who are they? I don't
yeah.
remember him. And they go like, I don't know. You
the
know.
Camelot Kings, had you had heard, have you had, did
we
you
heard
hear
of
them
yes,
before prior? Okay.
Kelvin Morgan knew of the Camelot Kings, and I think at one time he was in their group, and he used to tell us, they're bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they're bad.
Yeah.
So, meaning they were good at performing, not bad guys.
Yeah, no,
just
I completely
good at performing.
Understand, yeah.
So, but it didn't matter because everybody was still, you still worked on your craft.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Now, being that it was at the, in Fresno, this event, and there was a Madeira crew and then the Camelot Kings from the Bay Area, did you feel like there was a little bit of local support, you know?
Not really.
So
there were people,
there wasn't
no,
that dynamic
no, no,
of like,
you
these
had
guys are from
a
Fresno.
Whole bunch of people from Madeira. You had people
oh,
from,
okay.
You really didn't have back then demographics to where people are from. You, it was so dark, you really couldn't tell.
Yeah.
You know.
So whoever performed the best, that's who was going to get
the
crowd.
That's
you know?
The way it was.
Okay.
And then the people, like a lot of people didn't really know us as a group because at that time they weren't privy to see us perform.
Mm-hmm.
So they had heard some stuff, but what's that? Until
yeah.
you saw it, you didn't know.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay. Now, your older brother, Michael, did he perform with you guys
no.
at all?
Michael
no,
Michael was actually our martial arts instructor.
Okay, so
and
Michael
he was,
and Bobby were more into the martial
yes,
arts aspect,
yes.
And you and Deborah were?
We were martial artists as well.
Okay.
We just split our responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But we trained and did our thing. You had everything in different categories.
Okay.
That's the way it was. Mike every once in a while drove us. Matter of fact, Mike drove me to L.A. a couple of times to audition for Dick Clark's cousin when they were doing Putting on the Hits.
Okay.
So he drove me down to Hollywood several times for that. And he also took me to Burbank a couple of times. Deborah was in the academics.
Okay.
So that's where Deborah was. But yeah, so that's where Michael played a part. So he was like our transpo man if we needed it because he had a car.
Oh, okay.
So I remember I had to pay him. He had a what they called a deuce and a quarter, which is an Electra 225 car.
Uh-huh.
And it was big enough to carry our whole group. So I had to pay him to take our group to a performance. It was a nice looking car. So when you got out, it looked good. And
yeah.
that mattered.
Oh, yeah.
Looks mattered back then.
Image was a big part of it.
That was a big part of it. So I even did a spinoff group when I was leaving high school called the Mechanical Minutemen. And
okay.
there were a group of boys on my street that I wanted them to know that somebody cared about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I created a group called the Mechanical Minutemen so that I was like their big brother.
Like
without no funds, there was no funding. No, you just taught them how to cook, clean, and sew. And they all had matching uniforms, and we would perform. They would perform places. Matter of
okay.
fact, one of them is how I met my wife. They said, I have a cousin. I said, I don't want to meet nobody. And they said, you got to meet this cousin. And that's, again, how I met my wife.
Okay.
Because at that time I had the Minutemen and we were training and I'm teaching them how to do their routine. And they go, hey, Ken, you should meet our cousin. And I said, I don't want to meet anybody. I don't want to meet nobody. Now, I'm going to split it because I have to tell you the history of my wife and I in this whole thing.
Please do.
This is important because when I was doing performances as Ken the Robot, no longer with Soul Patrol.
So this was later on?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was individual. Mm-hmm. So I would do my own thing. I would perform by myself. I would perform off Henry Mancini's Baby Elephant Walk. So it was something totally different than, it was more mime, but I never painted my face.
Okay.
Okay. So that, and I would do the glass. I was like the glass king where you actually did this and you were the, that was the glass.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the king of it. So one time at an Edison talent show audition where everybody was invited. I mean, everybody was supposed to be a real big show that everybody was supposed to be there. Boogaloo, Electric Boogaloo guys were there.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was supposed to be a big talent show. So I'm on stage practicing during my rehearsal time. And I'm looking from the stage, I look through the cafeteria window and I see Kathleen, my wife, to be practicing the glass, but she just wasn't doing it right. I'm like, that girl's just not doing it right. And I, of course, I thought she was cute, but I went over and said, I gotta show you how to do this, because, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So I showed her how to do it, and I liked her. I liked her. I said, oh, wow. I said, where you live? And I kind of got generally where you live. Okay. So the show was canceled, and about a year and a half later, I saw her on the bus because I was on my way to do a performance downtown Fresno for a big company. And I said, that's that girl, you know, because I'd went by her house to see if she'd be outside, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't see her. So I saw her on the bus. At that time, all these girls wanted to talk to me, so I was wanting to talk to her, but she ignored me because she said, da-da-da. So a year later, we're at the Fresno Fair, Deborah and I performing.
Okay.
I look over, there's that girl. She's wearing red vest, red shiny pants. I said, that's that girl. But she didn't talk to me because there was a competition.
Mm-hmm.
So the dressing room, she went on, and it was time for us to get dressed. She left the room. I was dressing, and I found her vest. I felt it. I said, this feels like that girl's vest. And she was no longer there.
Okay.
2 years later, when I'm with my mechanical Minutemen, they said they had a cousin. I said, I don't want to meet nobody. And they said, she's coming. I said, I don't want to meet nobody. I talked to her on the phone. Yeah, hi, but whatever, right? She's walking down the street, and I said, that's that girl. That's our story.
Wow. That's true, an amazing story.
True story.
So you guys had a few chance encounters over the course of
a few years before you were actually introduced. Yes, we did. And so once we met up, we would rehearse all of our routines on my porch, so that whenever we were called to perform, we knew what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
There was no doubt.
Now, when you met her through the mechanical Minutemen, is that when you guys became sort of a couple?
Yes, and yes.
When, now, after you started dating, how long was it till you started performing together? Was that immediate?
Immediate. Because she was a quiet, she was quiet until it was time to dance. And she had a spirit in her dance. And that's what I appreciated, is her vibrancy in dance.
Mm.
There was nothing lewd and any of that stuff, but she could step. She had good footwork and creative on the fly without panicking. And to me, I like that. That was a good characteristic for me.
And once you met your wife, did you still perform with Deborah as the puppets?
Nope.
Okay, so that marked sort of the end of
that
transition.
That kind of marked the end of that.
You were performing solo as Ken the Robot, correct, at that point?
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Right.
You and Deborah performed, about what age group
were
you?
We were still in high school, maybe 10th grade, 11th grade, yeah.
And you guys did a few at least a performance at the Fresno Fairgrounds.
Yeah, we did the grand finals of the talent competition at the Fresno Fair, and we won that.
What year was that, do you recall?
I see the year of 78.
Okay, late 70s?
When Freddie Fender was one of the keynote players there that year. Yeah.
Freddie Fender?
Yes.
Okay.
We opened for him actually at that time.
Okay. So then once you started in with your wife, what was that group again?
My wife, we were the Fancy Dancing
Machines.
Fancy
Dancers,
machines.
That's it. Yes. Fancy Dancing Machine?
Machines.
Okay.
Right.
And did you guys just continue on
performing locally? We performed on Channel 30. We performed in L.A. for a tribute for Michael Jackson at that time, down the street from Michael's house. We were everywhere. We got paid to perform at parties, mm-hmm. different high-end places, convention centers, different places, big fashion shows that were high profile. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you performed as Ken the Robot, I noticed that you you made a statement saying you never painted your face.
No.
Would you like to
I just
expand on that? And what was the traditional, I mean, not being that familiar to
Marcel Marceau, and Marcel Marceau was a mime that they painted their face for expression.
Yeah.
I felt I was creative enough to create those expressions without putting white on my face.
Okay.
I just didn't, I don't know, I felt that was taking things back to the old racist days in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like putting white on my face. I just had a problem with that.
Yeah.
And I said, why would I try to fake expressions? That's my thing. If you could do it with no painting your face.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. So I made faces that made people laugh, so you didn't have to paint a smile on. If you go smile. That was my thing.
Oh, okay.
So it was more of a, let me do it. Let me do what I do, you know. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you that we haven't covered that, you know, you feel is important to your story? I have, you know, some questions that I could ask, but if you have anything
that
we haven't covered,
sure,
I'd love to hear.
I just wanted to make sure that people understood generationally that when they talk about, when they use the term hip-hop, we never really said that.
Okay.
We just called it performing,
mm-hmm.
and everybody had different styles. We wanted to be unique in everything we did. We didn't want to be mundane and routine.
Mm-hmm.
I was a busy person. I was still private, but I wanted to help. So when I created the Mechanical Minutemen, I wanted to help because I knew if I didn't do something with these boys, they would end up in jail or dead.
Okay.
Because they were literally kind of running the streets. And,
yeah.
You know, and I said, I can't help. You live on my street. So that meant a lot to me to kind of take them under my wing. I took them fishing. I taught them how to cook. I taught them how to cook fish and foil, little things. And they, you know, because they were going like, man, da-da-da-da-da. And I would tell them, go to school. And the mamas would come and tell me, hey, so-and-so didn't go to school, or he did, or he's doing better, and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I felt good about that.
Were you kind of like an older brother type of figure?
In a
to
way,
them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Older brother slash daddy.
Oh, okay. So these were a younger group?
They were younger.
The
yeah, they were younger. Yeah, they were younger. A matter of fact, I have a 3/4 inch of some footage that we had filmed because we performed at other places, and some of it we got filmed because
mm-hmm.
we wanted people to know, look, they even did the Christmas parade one year and won.
Yeah.
They just did it to perform. They didn't do it to compete,
mm-hmm.
but they won. So I felt
you must have had some talent.
They were my and they were all different.
Yeah,
and they were kind of modeled after Soul Patrol.
Oh, okay.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So,
to the larger picture of like hip hop in general, how do you feel like? I mean, it sounds like a lot of your background is popping, locking, that
mm-hmm.
type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel hip hop has incorporated aspects of popping and locking into like modern hip hop dance?
Because people still, the old school style is still, when you hear a good beat, then people would move to that beat. Okay, so whatever you were saying is over here, but that beat captivated. That's why they used to say, move your feet to that beat.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of common when people can get to that beat. But then you have the other side of it where you have the other connotations tied to it, that for certain parts of society it closed off that because certain people didn't want to perform to hearing what was being said. So it's like you're bringing that here. For those that live that life and do that, that's over there.
Mm-hmm.
But for those that didn't want that around their audiences, then you did something else.
Okay.
So music styles were different too. So the different styles, the cameos, the Kraftwerks, the George Clinton, the Parliament style, the beat, Roger, Zap, that kind of wah-wah sound where people, it was different than the other sound.
Okay.
So.
What were some of your early influences? I know you mentioned your father as an early influence as far as dance. Did you have anyone like in the in neighborhoods that you grew up, or maybe that you met through foster care, or was it just mostly like a family type of thing?
I saw business people that like James Aldrich, Al Boyd, people like that that you looked at as a person coming from where I came from. You looked at their shoes, you looked at their pants going, okay, this guy's sharp. As we would say back then, we said this guy's sharp. Mm-hmm. Right, meaning sharp, but we looked and said, okay, he is dressed like he's winning. He's, you know, he looks successful, okay, and he's giving you pointers that didn't take a long time to give you those pointers. So you went like, okay, this is every.
And was this a local?
These were local gentlemen that, that meant that you saw and they were doing what they said they were going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so I looked at that and you went, okay, they can do it, and they told you to keep your head up and this, these kind of little things, so you did.
So these were like, he was probably one of your early dance influences, or just
not
life
dance at all, business in the community.
How to conduct yourself.
Yourself, you know.
Great.
And tact and decorum is what Al Boyd used to always tell me. Learn how to have tact and decorum.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you know how to act around people and with people.
And it sounds like you seem to incorporate a lot of that into your performance.
I did. Showmanship. You did stuff that made people laugh, and we did house events where people had their entire family over, and you would honor the grandparents and stuff like that by bringing them into the routine.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They thought that was, to me, it meant a lot.
So you would try to incorporate a lot of like audience participation?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All the time. And it was more like stuff where you would act like there's some thread on them, and you do the thread off their shoe, and to them, they were going like, "Now that's kind of crazy," and or a spider, or a glass, or something flying, and you caught it, or baseball, or football, and you kind of mimic this without makeup.
Okay, and you'd incorporate some of this mimicry to like within your dance steps as well.
Oh yeah, easy, real easy.
And you do this all to music.
All to music.
Oh wow,
all to music.
It's amazing.
All to music. It really was. So yeah.
Try to see if there's anything that specifically that we haven't covered. And this may be a little bit past the 70s and 80s, what we've been talking about. It sounds like you kind of separate what you did from hip hop music. Would you say that? Would you say that it's probably something different?
Yes.
From what I've heard in some of my research as well is like a lot of the popping and locking and boogaloo came from the West Coast, and a lot of
that's right.
Break dancing,
you're right.
That
yes.
kind of thing
yes.
came from the East Coast.
That's about right.
Did you have any interaction with anyone that had like an East Coast style that maybe brought that to the West Coast, or was it strictly mostly?
You had people that used to bring out cardboard and would spin, and that.
Okay,
was
so
that.
You would see, there would
so
be
yeah,
some of that.
You did see it, and that was cool.
But it was separate.
It was separate.
Okay.
Though. You know, it was cool, but it was separate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
Well, it's amazing how it's all kind of sort of
and you,
incorporated.
You know, so you, and then you had movies. What impressed you is when they had a movie that would come out about the whole thing. Breaking.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And stuff like that, that you went, wow, they did a movie about that. And then you got served and stuff like that. So, yeah.
How do you feel, since you brought that up, that's another line of questioning. How do you feel about how breakdancing and, you know, popping and locking and things, just that culture of dance in general has been represented in those movies? Do you
think it was done well.
Okay.
I think that it opened a lot of doors for people that normally maybe wouldn't have been noticed.
Because
you still had actors that had to learn it that were not dancers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you had people that was an actor, but he or she may not have been a dancer that had to learn it and be real with it on set, and they had to rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was, you know, raw. Some of it, so when they did a dance scene, they filmed it three or four times, and they said, okay, no more rehearsals. We're going to take what we got, drop the beat, and throw it in there in editing, or in post, as they say.
Yeah.
So.
Have you worked with any actors or anything to try to teach them steps, or were you more
I
of a performer?
I taught a robot class for Federico's Dance Studio. Now that you bring that up, that's crazy. But
and that was local?
Yeah, it was local, and the place is still there. There was somebody else. There was another young lady, Taryn Francis, that I taught some routines for, and Taryn went on to be the first young lady to win Star Search with 5 stars.
Oh, wow.
So as a gift to me, she ended up performing with Jackson, with Hammer, with Abdul, and on Star Search. So a gift to me, she gave me a little booklet with a picture of her with each one of them.
Oh,
and her
wow.
dad would call me from each of the sets. Matter of fact, she was one of the children in the gym when Michael Jordan played basketball with Michael Jackson. So they locked all the children
oh.
in the gym. All the parents had to go. So this is the other part of it. That.
And you taught her at Federico?
No, she was here private. That was private. Like
oh, okay,
the dad said,
lessons.
Hey, she, you know, we need to add a component. She did ballet. She did all that stuff, but they needed another component
because mm-hmm.
they were traveling and performing.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
A broad topic, and you may or you probably have some, I guess, idea or way of thinking about this. Michael Jackson, when he did the moonwalk in like
mm-hmm.
the late or early mm-hmm. 80s, I believe, some of what I've researched too says that it's been mislabeled as the moonwalk, and it's what he was actually doing was the backslide.
That's true.
Is that true?
That's true.
Okay. And what would be the difference between the moonwalk
well,
and the
backslide?
Well,
the moonwalk was actually where you went. Keith used to do that.
Okay.
Where you went forward like you were walking on the moon.
Oh,
this
I got
way,
it.
Slow. So Keith was impeccable with that. So he would actually float. It made by him rocking it gave the illusion of floating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Michael also did, so that was backslide by Jeffrey Daniels from Shalimar.
Okay.
So that you'll see that in your research.
Mm-hmm.
And then the camel walk was another thing Michael used to do when you used to skip forward and bend your knees forward.
Mm-hmm.
That was the camel walk. So yeah, that's true.
How do you think maybe that mislabeling occurred, you know?
I don't know.
You don't you
people
don't.
You know, when they see like the glass, most people don't call this the glass at all. They don't even know what to call it.
Yeah.
It's been called
so intermingled.
And, you know, when you say the moonwalk and they go, oh, he moonwalked and it, if it got into a popular circle then it was accepted. That's
mm-hmm.
basically what happened.
So like performers like Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, MC Hammer, Paul Abdul, like that you mentioned, do you feel like they've incorporated a lot of what you did and or the
sure
styles that you did,
sure did.
And kind of
sure
took
did.
It and
sure
took
did.
It to a larger level?
Sure they did.
Okay.
I mean, you
how
know,
do you feel about that?
It was, Janet was danceable, you know, dance queen.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, a performer,
mm-hmm.
a writer, a director, a cinematographer on that level. Hammer, business, right? You know, that's why he came up with, uh-oh, here comes the Hammer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a brand. So then you had people that at that point was able to brand it out as opposed to just limit it. So when Hammer got out, I mean, it was, you said, here comes Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's from the Bay Area.
Yeah,
there
that's
you
right.
go. So.
Yeah. You mentioned the West Coast Relays. Do you have any particular stories that maybe stand out of you attending or performing? Or
you knew a lot of people were coming to town. You knew a lot of, you just wanted to go perform for one of those audiences that brought people in from other areas that would hopefully either tip you or pay you to perform for their event. That
mm-hmm.
was preferably upscale, because if it was like non-upscale, then they wouldn't have the money to pay you.
Yeah.
So you say, why would I go through all that if I couldn't get paid?
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the other side of concerns of that and the business side. See, if you didn't think business, then you were like, okay, we're just doing it for fun. But after a while, you say, how long do you do it for fun?
Yeah.
You know, so.
And again, some of my research, like on the Electric Boogaloos, it seemed like some of the members of that group sort of got disenfranchised because of bad managing.
Part of that.
Feeling
I mean,
like they were taken advantage of
I mean,
and not paid what
yeah.
they deserved.
And without representation proper and all that, you're going to have that. You're going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. You know, being out of the Soul Patrol, again, I said, gentlemen, guys, we have to be on time. We can't, there's certain things we can't do at a performance. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was still individually me. So if you didn't do what we were supposed to do and you came in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
you weren't, your mind wasn't there. We can't be together.
Yeah.
I couldn't get caught up. Couldn't.
So you were a little bit more business-like than
yes,
maybe
very
some
much.
Of your contemporaries
very much.
Were?
Very
and
much.
That probably served you well?
Very much.
You show?
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Okay.
I've just always been that way. You have to, you know, your reputation. So not only are you a performer, but you're in the community, and as you started growing, you still had a brand. You had the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to cut this off, but I gotta get going.
Oh yeah, that's fine. Is there any last minute thing that you might like to add?
I just want to say that I appreciate Fresno State and your group,
okay,
and your professors doing this project.
Okay.
I really do, because of the fact that it's kind of an untold story, mm-hmm, about what was going on and the mindset, and I just want to make sure my input was allowed to make that happen, you know, in a sense of just another voice that was really in it, that was involved, that saw certain things.
Well, thank you. That's one of the main reasons why we wanted to work on the project, to get, you know, people that maybe haven't had that, been able to, you know, speak their mind and kind of express their voice that they had during that time.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of research on it, but, you know, having originated in Fresno, it's something that, you know, we really felt like the community of Fresno could really speak on it.
And
add to the narrative.
I really wanted to make sure.
You've done a great job with that.
I wanted to make sure, just because we were there, so I appreciate it.
And you'd say your timing was probably like 70s, 80s that time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. 74. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and if we weren't, I mean, I understand you have to go. I'd love to hear about your grandson that's
Donald, yeah.
That's performing as well.
I have an email, so I'll be.
Okay, yeah, maybe I can contact you.
Well, email me. Send me an email.
Yeah, maybe, I'll email you, and if maybe you think of anything that you'd like to add to it, or maybe.
There's some pictures I want to email you of the Mechanical Minutemen.
That'd be awesome.
I have
really
pictures with them, so I'll definitely make sure.
I know Professor Guzman and Slusser would really appreciate that, too. That would really help
I'll make sure. I just want to make sure that we connected so that I didn't miss the boat.
Thank you so much for
coming out. I appreciate it, big man.
I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
It.
All right.